From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Uh-oh, now I've learned that there's another plant I didn't think I could grow in my northern garden that it sounds like I can. Hello, crinum lilies, you gorgeous size XL bulbs that I thought were the domain of southern gardeners only and not for me. A new book about them by Jenks Farmer is teaching me otherwise and making me want to order some bulbs. More in a moment about crinum, but first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
Augustus Jenkins Farmer, a.k.a. Jenks Farmer, is a longtime horticulturist and garden designer who's former director of Riverbanks Botanical Garden in South Carolina and author of a couple of previous books. These days, he is true to his surname, also a farmer, specializing in growing and selling crinum lilies and a few other goodies from his organically managed 18th century South Carolina farm. His new self-published book is called Crinum, Unearthing the History and Cultivation of the World's Biggest Bulb. And I'm glad to welcome him to the show. Hi, Jenks. How are you?
Good morning, Margaret. Great.
Yes. How is it down there?
It's awesome. We thought we were going to have some cold, but today it is bright and sunny and about 50, 55, which is perfect Christmas weather for us. Chilly enough to feel like the season, but warm enough to be in short sleeves.
Yeah, do some gardening. So before we get started, I should say that we'll have a giveaway of a copy of the book, of your new book, with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. You describe your 30-year obsession, your crinum journey, as a 30-year obsession. And so for some of us non-Southerners who might not know crinum lilies firsthand yet, paint us kind of a verbal picture. I think they're related to amaryllis, and where are they native, and, you know, kind of what are they like?
Okay, the easiest way to picture a crinum is to imagine that Christmas amaryllis, but on steroids. So now let me start over. Not all crinums are giant, but most of them that are really big and showy and like flower waist to chest high, those are the things that grab our attention.
Wow.
They have these big strappy leaves. Some people say they look like corn leaves, but they all come out in a clump. So like that amaryllis or like a day lily, but just bigger all the way around. Like some of the crinum leaves can be as wide as my palm, so 4 or 5 inches wide and 5 feet long.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Where are they from originally? There's different species of crinum in the genus crinum.
Yeah, there are a lot of different species, and they're what we call pan-tropical, so they're from every tropical humid climate around the equator.
Oh.
Yeah, in fact, we have a native one, Crinum americanum, and there are Caribbean natives. But the ones that gardeners have really fallen in love with over the centuries are mostly from Central Africa.
Oh, wow.
The other interesting thing about them is that these are all plants that almost always grow along rivers. Not in the river necessarily, but up on the stream banks. So they're very tolerant to flooding, and especially in the South, that's really important. And it makes them very adaptable to coastal gardens where they can tolerate saltwater flooding. But because they're from up on the bank, they can also tolerate long dry periods.
Huh. That's unusual, I would think, for a bulb. A geophyte, as we would call a bulb, right? Like this underground storage organ thing that it can tolerate wet like that. I don't think of bulbs as liking the wet.
No, a lot of bulbs don't. And the typical spring bulbs, especially that we grow commonly in gardens, most of those bulbs are Mediterranean, so they really don't like the wet. But these are more bog plants. In fact, there are even aquatic crinums. There's one that's very popular in the aquarium trade.
Oh.
But, yeah.
It's
not particularly pretty, so it's not one that I grew. But I have, because I have this sort of desire to grow and try them all.
Yeah. When do they bloom, or do they have a long bloom time, and what's the color range of the flowers and things like that?
So, you know, when I tell people how to pick a crinum, I start with when its flowers are going to come on.
Mm-hmm.
Because the flowers come at different seasons depending on the cultivar or, like, the species.
Right.
In our climate, we're in zone 8.
Mm-hmm.
So we have crinums that start in March, and they look great through May, but then they're totally ending. And, you know, you don't have anything but foliage on that plant for the rest of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But then other crinums come on. So on our farm, the peak time is early June, where the farm is just a sea of pink flowers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then there are a few that come on later, especially after, like, fall rainstorms, we'll get a few. But for the most part, they're summer, and in the colder you go, the more compressed that is, of course. So in, like, St. Louis, you would have almost all your crinums come on June and July.
Mm-hmm.
You ask about color of flowers, too.
Yeah.
The color goes from pure white to rich burgundy reds and pretty much everything in between, including some fuchsia pinks and lots of soft pinks, as well as stripes of all different patterns. So some that are white petaled with a pink stripe down the middle, and some that are white petaled with a deep burgundy kind of blood red stripe.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, you, in your subtitle of your new book, you call it the world's biggest bulb. Is it the biggest bulb? I mean, some of the pictures in the book are hilarious, Jenks, with you holding an unearthed bulb. And I mean, the thing is a monster.
Okay, Margaret, the title is meant to be a little bit provocative. You know,
hyperbole.
You have to do a little bit of marketing.
Yeah.
So if you were to search the web for what's the biggest bulb in the world, then another bulb pops up. And you'll see things that say, this bulb gets up to 12 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm ready for the competition. I have a picture I took 2 days ago that's a crinum bulb that has a tape measure wrapped around it, and it's 26 inches around.
Oh, my goodness. That's like an underground pineapple.
That's like the size of my head.
Yeah. Wow.
So I think there's some definite, you know, possibility that it is the biggest bulb in the world, but it is a somewhat provocative title. It was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is also kind of weird, because I have crinums that are tiny too.
Yes.
I have species of crinums, the American species, for example, the bulb gets no bigger than a golf ball, and the flower is only 14 inches tall.
Okay.
I grow an Indian species that's about 3 inches tall, and it's a real weirdo. I grow it in a pot because I'm fascinated by it. It's about 3 inches tall, but it only flowers from 10 p.m. till about 8 a.m. the next morning.
Oh, my goodness. I guess you stay up that night?
No, I don't. But I get up early enough to see it.
Okay. Oh, that's good. That's smart.
All right. So there are other bulbs, and there's huge variation within the genus. So again, they go from 2 inches to 12 feet tall if you get down into, like, Miami Gardens or Houston Gardens.
Wow. And so you know, again, as I said in the beginning, you know, and I've always, since I've been a gardener, I've known about them because some of our great catalogs in these decades that I've been a gardener are from southern, you know, are in the south and so forth, and they would sell crinums, and but I thought, oh, that's not for me, but I knew what they were. But you've, like, over the years, you've sent them, sold them, sent them, shared them with gardeners in many, you know, at zoos, botanical gardens, home gardeners in many different places. And that's by matching the right species or variety that's appropriate to the region. Is that kind of...
Exactly. So when we say that we know today that crinums are can be very cold hardy, but it's certainly dependent on the species.
Okay.
So, for example, one of our earliest flowering ones, it happens to be one of my favorites, is called the orange river lily. Not because it's orange, but because it comes from the Orange River in South Africa.
Oh.
Okay, so I have seen it in Copenhagen. I have a friend who grows it in Boston. Now, he works hard on his, so he's a little bit out of the norm. But I have a friend in Connecticut who's grown it as a completely hardy perennial that even sets seed and seeds itself in his garden.
Wow.
Okay, we have... good friends at the Pittsburgh Zoo. I've sent crinums to them for years, and their crinum, there's a beautiful shell pink called Cecil Howdy Shell, and that one's grown in the gorillas exhibit at the Pittsburgh Zoo for a long time.
That's fun.
So, you know, I think this is really fun to learn what grows where, especially when we've made assumptions for. You know, for most of my life, I, like you, thought, oh, these are deep south plants. But those assumptions simply were untested.
Right.
I think one reason is they tend to be expensive bulbs. You know, these are long-term plants. They're slow to grow for the growers, and they're slow to grow in a garden. So they're investments in time as well as money. So people have been reluctant to try them in colder places until the last 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the truth with hardiness of anything. I mean, so many plants that when I began gardening, it said they were zone 6 or 7, and now we know they're zone 5, but it was just that they hadn't been distributed throughout the North as much, and people didn't know, and there was no data, so to speak.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And you know, I doubt that crinums are ever going to become the peonies of the North, right? they're plants that really intrepid gardeners are going to try. They're plants of botanical gardens and zoos, and people who are really into collecting are going to try. But you're never going to see masses of them, at least I hope not. I really love that we can maintain regionality. Like, I don't even try to grow peonies here because they hate our heat.
Yes.
And I want to have the adventure, and I want to have the experience of seeing them spectacular where they really want to be.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And but, you know, gardeners love to have sort of some special treasures and, you know, push things a little bit here and there. And I mean, you said some are hardy in Miami. I bet you can't grow those where you are, just like I can't grow all the mainstream ones, the ones that maybe are your main season ones. I probably couldn't grow, but could I? I grow lots of tender bulbs that I then stash the pots in my basement or grow them as a sort of house plant. Or let them go dormant or whatever. Can some of them adapt to that type of culture?
Oh, you know, so what we do with some of the big tropical ones, they have brilliant colored leaves, like fuchsia leaves or gold leaves, variegated. So I really want to grow those, but it's too cold where I am to do it. So we grow them in pots and leave them outside all summer. They're really easy in pots because crinums can tolerate drought. So if I forget them, you know, I forget to water for 2 weeks and it's okay. In the fall, we cut back a good bit of that foliage and bring them into a garage or a barn where it's not heated, but it's protected enough that they're fine. We just let them stay pretty dry in their pot, let them go dormant, and then take them out in the springtime. But the big, even the big tropical ones, are often used as display plants and house plants and interior plants. Not so much here in the U.S., but you see that in Southeast Asia a lot.
So I can grow some in pots up here even? Could I do that? Because I have lots of bulbs, you know, that I store in the winter, all kinds of non-hardy things. And could I do that to get started?
So you could definitely do that. And with the plan of taking them inside, if you have a basement or somewhere like that to store them in the winter.
You should see my basement, Jenks, at this time of year.
Do you not have room for the biggest bulbs in the world down there?
Well, I've got so many bulbs down there, it's hilarious. But yeah, I could do it. Sure, absolutely.
We'll send you the little crinums. Even into places like Baltimore, you can grow them in containers that you keep outside as long as you move those containers up against a warm house. So in the book, in my chapter on cold gardening with crinums, a fella in Baltimore talks about how he brings his all up against the house, and he's careful to let them stay kind of dry, and he leaves a couple of different species outside that way.
Oh, I was interested just reading the book that not only are there different species appropriate for different regions, different, you know, climates, et cetera, but that you also plant the bulbs at different depths, like you had this kind of illustration or whatever, you know, so they're not all the same. I mean, they're such a range, like you were speaking about earlier, in bulb size and the depth you plant them at. Is there sort of a general rule of how
even the size, even the shape of the crinum bulbs can differ? Some of them have a big basketball-like shape that we talked about earlier, or some of them have a golf ball-like shape. But some of them are just straight up and down, and you almost wouldn't recognize it as a bulb. Some of them actually run. Like they send out runners and they'll colonize an area. So the planting depth is completely dependent on the species. But most of them that we grow in horticulture, most of the big showy ones that people want in gardens, they need to be 12 to 15 inches deep. And in colder places, they may even need to be deeper. And that sounds really deep, but remember, we're talking about a bulb that's going to, like the bulbs that we ship actually come in there about 18 inches long. So,
Wow. I think in the intro to the book, you describe the underground as a Medusa. Yeah, the roots that as long
so
as...
It's so crazy. We've dug, I don't think I talked about this in the book, but we've dug crinum clumps that are 400 or 500 pounds. You have to chain it up, and you have to pull the thing out with a tractor.
Wow!
And that's what I mean when I say Medusa. It's like all these big bulbs clumped together, what we call a mother bulb, and then all these little bulbs that come off. So it's a community, and then they have big, thick roots. So unlike spring bulbs, which lose their roots at some point in their life. Like every summer, spring bulbs lose their roots, right? They quit growing, the roots die off, and then they start growing again next year. But crinum roots never do that. Those roots continue growing, so you'll have roots that can be 5 feet or, you know, really, really long.
Wow. They can be really big, they can be planted really deep in some cases, and they're very long-lasting, aren't they? And I guess that's the thing about the traditional, like what I knew about them was that they were this traditional plant, and they were like pass-alongs, and, you know, they had like a, well, just just longevity. So talk about that a little bit.
That's something that's very important to me. I like horticulture history a lot, and I like my connections with my mentors, something I really value. I mean, they're the people who inspired me, and I have am so happy and so lucky to have plants that actually belong to them. So I have one crinum that I know is now 80 years old or more. I have many crinums that I grow and produce that came from one of my very important mentors who was involved in the specialty crinum societies around the globe. But they, on a general level, in old farm communities and rural gardens and, you know, backyard southern gardeners, passed crinums around like crazy because you can dig them up any time of the year. So it doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to say, oh, I'm going to come back and dig that thing up when it's the right time. You can get it when you're there visiting with somebody. If you don't get it in the ground, if you forget, if it stays in the trunk of your car for a couple of weeks, that's all right. The crinum doesn't mind. It can dry out and live above ground dormant for years. Mm. So it makes a perfect pass-along plant. And because they have that longevity, they tend to carry stories. And that's, I think that's one of the things that always appealed to me. You'll hear people, old gardeners around, you know, who are backyard gardeners who aren't going to read a book like this, but they know that plant, but they might know it as, you know, Aunt Sally's lily or...
Right.
So I love that, the fact that they carry stories with them.
Right. In the last couple of few minutes, I just wanted to say I noticed on your website, and you do sell crinums as well as a few other things, that you have some Euchomus, the pineapple lilies, which, speaking of things that I have a lot of in my basement right now in the winter. There's ones that I don't know about that you have some of those. So just a quick little minute pitch for some of the newer Euchomus. If you wouldn't mind.
Okay. So we are a farm, like you said in the beginning. We grow everything in the ground. We're an organic farm. Things are in rows. It's just rows of lilies and rows of spider lilies. And now we're doing more and more rows of pineapple lilies, which, you know, are such a great plant because you can do them in containers. They're small, easy to take in the winter. But there's been a big interest in them as a florist crop. Now, plants that are grown for florist crops, they're not necessarily good garden plants. So we've been buying these florist cultivars and trialing them. One of my favorites from the trials is one called Coco. I have no idea why it's named Coco. I think it's probably named that for Coco Chanel because it's a dark leaf. It has a really dark flower, but it's much more compact than... Let's say, you know, sparkling burgundy, the old burgundy.
Yes, I have some in the cellar. Yeah.
Love that one. Coco is like that, but it's about two-thirds of the size.
Interesting.
You know, and not only in the garden, but pineapple lilies make awesome cut flowers for the house. They last for months.
Except for Euchomus bicolor. Don't use that one as a cut flower because it's... stinks like dead meat.
it is so smelly.
But I love it.
You know,
anyway.
I should say that about crinums too. The one that I recommended, the orange river lily, it's a really beautiful one, tough as nails, but it's a little unpleasant too.
So Euchomus. Well, I just love them, and I was excited to see that you have several that I've never even seen or heard of. So I might have to be placing an order for them.
We use them for rooftop plants too. They're a great rooftop plant.
You're kidding.
Mm-mm. Because they don't need, you know, the little low soil profile. They make a complete, very solid ground cover almost all summer.
Wow. Who would have thunk? I had no idea. I use them in pots, obviously. Again, up here in the north, that's what I do with them. They're fabulous. But, well, Jenks Farmer, I'm so glad to speak to you. And thank you so much for alerting me to the news of your new book, Crinum, Unearthing the History and Cultivation of the World's Biggest Bulb, which I'm really enjoying. And I'm excited about trying a new plant. So thank you.
Thanks, Margaret. We'll look forward to seeing pictures from crinums in your garden this summer.
Okay, I hope I do a good job. Okay, pressure, pressure. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
And talk to all the rest of you soon again, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.